Now, my friends, lay me down to sleep. A fifth of whiskey down by my feet. If I should die before I wake, tell everyone that I drank it straight. Let's get this show on the road.
Commanding you to bow down.
I'm on your side.
By branding you as a rebel.
But you're not.
A traitor.
This isn't freedom. This is fear.
We are not the government. The government is not us.
This is the files.
Welcome to Dean O Files, episode number 75. Coming to you live on the 9th of September from Mega City 3. Mega City 3, where it is always hot. It is... well, it's the climate. What are you gonna do? Coming up on September 11th, too. I was wondering if I was thinking about doing something for that. Thinking about doing something for September 11th. I elected not to. Perhaps next year. Because there is some stuff I'd like to talk about with regard to that, but it just never seems like the right time. This is the third time recording this intro, because stuff keeps breaking on me. So if something goes wrong during the course of the show, I will try to release a clean episode to the internet tonight. Oh, goodness. A lot of news today. Whole lot of news. We got an interesting article for you. We got some follow-ups on some other stories. A little bit of interesting Trump news, actually. Some interesting Trump news coming down the pipe. But before we get into any of that, we have our interesting article from Reason.com. Antonin Scalia's surprising role in the latest Supreme Court fight over legal protections for gays. This was written on the 6th of September, published rather on the 6th of September, written by Damon Root. The late Justice Antonin Scalia was nobody's idea of a gay rights activist. When the Supreme Court struck down a state ban on homosexual conduct in Lawrence v. Texas, Scalia faulted the majority for embracing the, quote, so-called homosexual agenda. When the Supreme Court recognized a constitutional right to same-sex marriage in Obergefell v. Hodges, I think that's how that's pronounced. Scalia denounced the ruling as a, quote, threat to American democracy. Scalia's views on legal protections for gays will be front and center once again next month when the Supreme Court hears a far-reaching case that asks whether anti-gay workplace discrimination is illegal under current federal law. Except this time around, Scalia's jurisprudence will be favorably cited and employed by the openly gay petitioner and his lawyers. The case is Bostock v. Clayton County, Georgia. Gerald Lynn Bostock was employed by Clayton County as a child welfare services coordinator. Too many R's in those words. He claims that he was fired solely on account of his sexual orientation. He argues that such actions by his employer violate federal law. According to Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, it is unlawful for an employer to discriminate against a job applicant or employee, quote, because of such individual's race, color, religion, sex, or national origin. The question before the Supreme Court on Bostock v. Clayton County is whether employment discrimination because of sexual orientation qualifies as employment discrimination because of sex. In their principal brief to the Supreme Court, Bostock and his lawyers rely in part on Justice Scalia's unanimous 1998 ruling on Onaco v. Sundowner Offshore Services, Inc. At issue was whether same-sex workplace harassment violated Title VII's prohibition on discrimination because of sex. Scalia held that it did. Quote, male-on-male sexual harassment in the workplace was assuredly not the principal evil Congress was concerned with when it enacted Title VII, Scalia acknowledged, but statutory prohibitions often go beyond the principal evil to cover reasonably comparable evils, and it is ultimately the provisions of our laws rather than the principal concerns of our legislatures by which we are governed. The protections of Title VII, Scalia concluded, quote, must extend to sexual harassment of any kind that meets the statutory requirements. I think this is interesting. There is more to this article that I'm not going to read, but I don't know. I think it's interesting and strange that Scalia is going to be cited as a supporting opinion for gay rights stuff. That's you live long enough, you see everything happen. Follow up on a story we've been covering for a couple of weeks now. This vape story, that has been going around. Everybody's getting sick because of the vaping. That damn Juuls out here making everybody have respiratory illnesses, also from reason. Study finds that the vast majority of respiratory diseases in vapors are linked to illegal THC products. Written by Jacob Solem, published on today, the 9th of September. According to a new report on patients in Illinois and Wisconsin who experienced severe respiratory illness after vaping, 83% admitted to using black market cannabis products, while 70% said they had used nicotine only. Some of them may have been reluctant to admit using illegal drugs, and it's not clear that any of them were using standard e-cigarettes. These findings cast further doubt on the wisdom of the general warnings about vaping and e-cigarettes, which imply that illegal nicotine products are implicated in these cases. Which imply that legal nicotine products are implicated in these cases. Such warnings may encourage former smokers who are now vaping to start smoking again, a decision that exposes them to much greater health risks. The new study, reported Friday in the New England Journal of Medicine, focused on 53 patients who had vaped within 90 days of their symptoms, typically within the previous week. Their median age was 19, nearly a third were younger than 18. Among the 41 patients who were extensively interviewed, that's in quotes, by the way, 80% reported using THC products, 7% mentioned CBD products, and 17% said they had vaped nicotine only. The authors note that, quote, information on product use is based on reports by the patients, and patients may be reluctant to report illicit drug use. The description of the vapes used by the patients indicates that most were black market products represented as containing cannabis extracts. Quote, patients reported using 14 distinct brands of THC products and 13 brands of nicotine products in a wide range of flavors, the researchers say. Quote, the most common THC product that was reported was marketed under the Dank Vape label, reported by 24 of 41 interviewed patients, 59%. Patients reported the use of a number of different e-cigarette devices to aerosolize these products. It's not clear whether any of the products in the THC-only cases were closed-system devices such as Juul as opposed to refillable vaporizers, nor is it clear whether the cartridges or e-liquids used in the devices were legally produced, illegal knockoffs, DIY solutions, or mystery fluids concocted by third-party suppliers. At last count, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention had identified over 450 possible cases, including 5 fatalities in which pulmonary diseases may have been caused by vaping. Data from California and New Mexico, like the Illinois and Wisconsin cases analyzed in the NEJM study, point to the THC products as the main issue. E-cigarettes have been in wide use for years. While these cases have cropped up only recently, it therefore seems likely that the agents responsible for the symptoms are relatively new. The theory currently favored by public health officials investigating lung diseases among vapors, the New York Times notes, is that, quote, some dangerous chemical or combination of chemicals has been introduced into the pipeline of vaping products. Investigators believe, quote, believe when people vape this noxious cocktail, it sets off a dangerous, even lethal reaction inside the lungs. They, quote, have said repeatedly they do not yet know which substance or device may be causing this reaction, and that is the subject of their urgent investigation. One possible culprit identified in most samples of cannabis extracts used by the Food and Drug Administration, FDA, and health officials in New York is vitamin E acetate, an oil-based nutritional supplement that may be dangerous when inhaled. Quote, legally sold nicotine-based e-cigs are not harmless, former FDA Chief Scott Gottlieb said on Twitter last week. Quote, but most of these severe cases so far appear to be symptoms that can occur when either oils or lipid-containing substances enter lungs. This points to illegal products that are being cut with dangerous chemicals as the culprit. He added that, quote, legitimate e-liquids are generally based on chemicals that are water-soluble, not oils that can cause acute lung injury. So I'm wondering if this is going to start making the rounds in the mainstream. The mainstream has been demonizing vaping, especially recently. And this count is very interesting. They have 450 in this story. Not 2 weeks ago, it was like 130. So this number is skyrocketing. It's a very interesting series of events. And I personally, I mean, it's always been in these stories, it's always been mentioned kind of off to the side, this idea that, you know, it could be illegal products, but Juul is bad. That's been basically the tone of all of these stories, and they kind of lower their voices when they talk about the fact that it's most likely not nicotine-based e-juice. I like the term e-juice. Not nicotine-based e-juice. So, I don't know. I think it's just interesting the way that the demonization, I don't know if it's going to work. I do not know if it's going to work, but they're certainly going to keep trying. This from thefire.org, published on September 5th, 2019. Western Illinois University's Zombie Free Speech Zone resurrected to shut down satirical pot brownies event. More than 16 years after Western Illinois University announced it was immediately eliminating its free speech zone, students are still feeling the bite of a zombie policy, one the university declared dead long ago but still lives on in the university speech codes. Today, the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education is calling on WIU to get its policies in order, ensure that its campus police know that they can't enforce a long-dead policy, and put a stake through the heart of this speech code once and for all. Quote, WIU was ahead of the pack in 2003 when they said they'd eliminate their unconstitutional free speech zone, said Adam Steinbaugh, director of FIRE's Individual Rights Defense Program. Quote, now it's time they put their laudable words into action by finally removing the restrictions that still stifle student expression today. Earlier this year, student Dylan Krall and other members of the student group Young Americans for Liberty gathered in an open area of campus to encourage students to join the group. They also held out a sign promoting free pot brownies, pot there's in quotes, a literal pot full of brownies, sans marijuana, as the use of quotation marks made obvious. The students took the opportunity to discuss their views on the decriminalization and legalization of marijuana, which the Illinois legislature was debating at the time. Illinois subsequently legalized recreational use of marijuana. Within minutes, the students were stopped by two members of the WIU police, who told Crowell that the officers were, quote, going to give him an education on the repercussions of bringing marijuana to campus. At least one of the officers noted his personal disagreement with the policy positions advocated by the students and asked them to remove the word pot from the sign. Crowell refused. What a fucking piece of shit. Not Crowell, the fucking cop. Jesus, what a bitch. The officers further explained that they, quote, came out here because people thought you were handing out actual THC brownies and, quote, and anyways in commas, you're outside the free speech zone right behind the union. For that reason, literal speech police shut down the event. Quote, I was for when this policy was supposedly eliminated, but the unconstitutional free speech zone somehow still lives on, said Crowell, who has been trying to meet with the administrator since February to address the lingering speech code. Quote, it shouldn't take 16 years for a college to live up to its promises and obligations to protect free speech. As a public institution, WIU is bound by the First Amendment, and its continued use of a free speech area is unconstitutional. Further, police intervention over a free pot brownies event violates students' First Amendment right to engage in political expression. In responding to protected speech, police would unquestionably deter an ordinary student from engaging in future expressive activity. FIRE contacted WIU in June regarding the continued use of free speech zones. WIU responded that it would have the policy removed from their website, quote, as soon as possible. However, as students returned to class in August, the policies remained. Students who have been back to class for more than 2 weeks can still be punished by the policy that to this day remains published online and referenced as recently as this year. FIRE today is calling on WIU Acting President Martin Abraham to immediately remove the inconsistent policies that not only imperil students' First Amendment rights, but expose the institution to liability. There's more to the story. I'm not going to read it. I love this story partially because of the words of the cop. So let's go back up to that. Students were stopped by two members of the WIU police who told Crowell that the officers were, quote, going to give him an education, end quote, on the repercussions of bringing marijuana to campus. At least one of the officers noted his personal disagreement with the policy positions advocated by the students and asked them to remove the word pot from the sign. So this is an interesting free speech story on the FIRE that I'm actually going to present as a fuck the police story, because fuck these cops. Personal disagreement with the policy positions advocated by the students. Well, eat my ass. Like, fuck you. Who gives a shit what you think? Fucking cop. This is an interesting story as well, also from the FIRE, published on the 4th of September. Campus police said he shouldn't have said he should have been smarter than to exercise his First Amendment rights. Now he's suing. When Mike Brown tried to poll his fellow college students about legalizing marijuana, he hoped to spark a dialogue about civil liberties. Instead, he was deprived of his own. The campus police chief called him into his office and told him he should have been, quote, smarter than to exercise his First Amendment rights without the college's permission. Late yesterday, the Foundation for Individual Rights and Education, Brown sued Jones County Junior College over policies that deny students their First Amendment rights on campus. The public Mississippi institution twice stopped Brown from exercising his free speech rights when he tried to recruit fellow students for the campus chapter of the Young Americans for Liberty. Y'all just getting shit on all over the place. Look, I like Yale. I went to several Yale events when I was in college. They had the North Texas regional event was always at UNT, and I went there like 3 years in a row. I went to the Yale conference. Always great people there. Always some very enthusiastic anarchists there. Man, I'm sick of hearing about Yale getting shit on. In April, Brown and two other individuals held up a sign designed to poll students on the legalization of recreational marijuana. But Jones College administrators quickly summoned campus police because the group hadn't filled out the proper paperwork, which requires administrative approval and a minimum 3-day waiting period before, quote, gathering for any purpose anywhere on campus. Brown and another student were taken to the police chief's office where their friend, a non-student, was escorted to his car and told to leave immediately and not return or he'd face arrest. Back in the chief's office, the police chief told Brown that he should have known better than to blatantly exercise his free speech rights on campus without administrative approval. Quote, some people get in trouble for smoking weed, but at Jones College, I got in trouble just for trying to talk about it, said Brown. Colleges for cultivating thought and learning, and we know this is not true. Colleges for cultivating thought and learning and encouraging civil discourse with your peers, that's not what's happening at Jones College. That's a quote from Brown. He seems to be under the mistaken impression that college is anything other than indoctrination factory. This wasn't Brown's first experience having his First Amendment rights threatened at Jones College. In February, Brown and a friend set up a free speech ball, an inflatable beach ball on which students could write messages of their choice while Yale representative talked to them about the importance of free speech. An administrator informed them that they were not permitted on campus since they didn't have Jones College explicit approval. Brown was deflated, so was his beach ball. There's more to this story I'm not going to read. I always find these stories interesting. Stories of public institutions who come in and say, you're not allowed to talk. Wait, what do you mean I'm not allowed to talk? No, you're not allowed to... No, you don't get to talk. Talking is for people who filled out a form and waited 3 days. Never understood it, never will. It shouldn't. It's blatantly unconstitutional. Anyway, moving on, we have another story from Reason. I'm trying to blaze through these because there's a lot of news. Okay, this right here is, I may have already spoken about this. I know I talked about it on Twitter. But this is another list we can all be put on. I'm very excited to be put on another list. I'm sure you all are as well. This from Reason.com. Trump mulls Orwellian proposal to stop mass shootings by monitoring, quote, mentally ill people, end quote, for signs of imminent violence. This is published on the 9th of September, written by Jacob Sullum. The Trump administration is reportedly considering a pitch from former NBC chairman Robert Wright, a presidential pal, for a research program aimed at preventing mass shootings by electronically monitoring people who have received psychiatric diagnoses. That Orwellian plan may or may not be defeated by its utter impracticability. Wright has dubbed this idea Safe Home, an acronym for Stopping Aberrant Fatal Events by Helping Overcome Mental Extremes. Jesus Christ. The Washington Post reports that this 3-page proposal imagines using, quote, technology like phones and smartwatches to, quote, detect when mentally ill people are about to turn violent. The idea, the paper says, is to look for, quote, small changes that might foretell violence. This is pre-crime, man. This is ridiculous. The Post notes that, quote, only a quarter or less of mass shooters, quote, have diagnosed mental illness, but that's only the beginning of the difficulties with this half-baked scheme. The larger problem is that the percentage of, quote, mentally ill people, a group that by some estimates includes more than a quarter of the United States population in any given year. Yeah, I'm in that, actually. Thanks, though, you pieces of shit. Very close friends of mine in this group of people who are considered mentally ill. Christ on a cracker. Jesus. Who will use a gun to commit mass murders? Approximately zero. I need to start that sentence over. The larger problem is the percentage of mentally ill people, a group that by some estimates includes more than a quarter of the U.S. population in any given year, who will use a gun to commit mass murder is approximately zero. Likewise for the general population, since mass shootings are very rare events, accounting for less than 1% of gun homicides. We cannot stress this enough. We cannot stress this point enough. This shit does not happen statistically. It doesn't exist. It is fiction. People believe that it happens a lot because it's covered on the news a lot. But statistically, this is a fiction. A 2012 study that the Defense Department commissioned after the 2009 mass shooting at Fort Hood in Texas explains the significance of that fact in the appendix titled Prediction, Why It Won't Work. The appendix observes that, quote, low base rate events with high consequence pose a management challenge. In the case of, quote, targeted violence, for example, quote, there may be pre-existing behavior markers that are specifiable. Okay. But, quote, while such markers may be sensitive, they are of low specificity and thus carry the baggage of an unavoidable false alarm rate, which limits feasibility of prediction intervention strategies. In other words, even if certain, quote, red flags are common among mass shooters, almost none of the people who display those signs are bent on murderous violence. The Defense Department report illustrates the problem with a hypothetical example, quote, suppose we actually had a behavioral or biological screening test to identify those who are capable of targeted violent behavior with moderately high accuracy, the report says. If, quote, a population of 10,000 military personnel includes 10 individuals with extreme violent tendencies capable of executing an event such as that which occurred at Fort Hood, a test that correctly identified 8 of those 10 dangerous people would wrongly implicate, quote, 1,598 personnel who do not have these violent tendencies. That scenario assumes a predictive test that does not actually exist. Quote, we cannot overemphasize that there is no scientific basis for a screening instrument to test for future targeted violent behavior that is anywhere close to being as accurate as the hypothetical example above, the report says. The research program imagined by Wright is aimed at developing a predictive test, but even in the unlikely event that it succeeded, the enormous false positive problem would remain. Quote, according to a copy of the Safe Home proposal, the Post says, quote, all subjects involved in the research would be volunteers, and, quote, great care would be taken to protect each individual's privacy while, quote, profiling of any kind must be avoided. It is hard to see how profiling can be avoided, since the whole premise of the project is that people who fit a certain psychiatric profile are especially prone to mass murder. Ugh. Once the research has been completed, of course, the resulting information would be pretty useless if it could be deployed only against volunteers. So how would that work? Would people with certain psychiatric diagnoses be legally required to carry electronic monitors aimed at detecting, quote, small changes that might foretell violence? How could such a requirement be reconciled with due process or the Fourth Amendment? I'm reminded of an anime called Psycho Pass. And in this show, there's this futuristic, near-future world where the cops have these guns. And these guns, you point at a person, and it analyzes using this person's psychiatric profile, which is kept on an AI thing, whatever. It uses AI to analyze this person's mental state and whether or not they're capable of doing violence above a certain amount. Like if they're in a red zone, as easy as being particularly angry, they can shoot to kill. Psycho Pass is a great show. You should watch it. It has incredible political implications, which is something that Ixie said he wants to talk about on a kind of a special episode of Antifiles or something like that. He wants to talk about Psycho Pass on, maybe it was on this show he wanted to do it. I don't know. But he wants to talk about Psycho Pass and kind of the political implications of that, because that's exactly what we're talking about here. It is the exact same idea that we're talking about right here. Jeez. One more story before we get to what you know is coming. Let's go to The Verge. Professors rally behind MIT Media Lab director after Epstein funding scandal. That's right, we got some Epstein news. This published on the 27th of August. The conversation has veered into increasingly pessimistic territory, a new petition says. A group of prominent academics have signed a letter in support of MIT Media Lab director Joy Ito as MIT reckons with the revelation that it accepted around $800,000 in funds from convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. The letter seeks to gather support for Ito, who has apologized for accepting funds from the now deceased financier. Epstein had a reputation for cultivating relationships with scientists and funded, and, you know, politicians, and funded many scientific projects, including some at MIT. He was also linked to deceased MIT professor and AI pioneer Marvin Minsky, who was recently accused of having sex with one of Epstein's underage victims. Epstein also gave money to the Media Lab, among other institutions. In the wake of new charges, Epstein's support has become a source of public shame for the Media Lab. Ito published a public apology on August 15th, acknowledging that the MIT Media Lab received money from Epstein's foundations. Quote, "I knew about these gifts, and these funds were received with my permission," Ito wrote, adding, "I also allowed him to invest in several of my funds, which invest in tech startup companies outside of MIT." Okay. All right, Ito. What are you hiding? In the apology, he vowed to, quote, "raise an amount equivalent to the donations in the that the Media Lab received from Epstein and send that to nonprofits focused on supporting survivors of trafficking." He also promised to return the money that Epstein had invested in his funds. But the revelation had already created significant discord within the Media Lab. On August 10th, Ethan Zuckerman, the director of the Center for Civic Media at the Media Lab, resigned. In a Medium post published later, Zuckerman cited Ito's acceptance of funds from Epstein as the reason he was resigning. Quote, "The work my group does focuses on social justice and the inclusion of marginalized individuals and points of view." Okay, so you're doing good work then, sir. "It's hard to do that work with a straight face in a place that violated its own values so clearly in working with Epstein and disguising that relationship," Zuckerman wrote. But as pressure on Ito builds, some members of the MIT community have begun to voice public support for him. A new site registered on Monday has posted a public message of support for Ito, signed by more than 100 people so far. The letter reads, in part, quote, "Now is the time to revisit how the principles of an organization are expressed through its funding processes and to explore how we can together build mechanisms to ensure our fundraising efforts reflect our core values. However, the conversation has veered into increasingly pessimistic territory, and the media has focused their attention largely on this negativity. As such, it is our responsibility as members of the greater Media Lab community to add our voice to the conversation. We have experienced firsthand Joy's integrity and stand in testament to his overwhelmingly positive influence on our lives, and sincerely hope he remains our visionary director for many years to come." A number of prominent professors and thinkers involved with MIT and Harvard are listed as signers, including Harvard Law professor and Creative Commons founder Lawrence Lessig, Whole Earth Catalog founder Stuart Brand, Media Lab co-founder Nicholas Negroponte, and Harvard Law professor and EFF board member Jonathan Zittrain, a synthetic biology pioneer George Church, who also had ties to Epstein. You can read the entire letter, blah, 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 blah. Epstein had his finger in a lot of pies, man. So it's not surprising that we would have a story like this. It's just not. I just love the fact that the tangled web that this Epstein thing has created keeps expanding. I was listening to the Dick Show, and one of the things that Sean said something to the gist of it was, a lot of people are acting like he's just a dead pedophile. And the discussion went on to basically point out that that's not the case. Epstein, yeah, he's a dead pedophile, but also he could have led to hundreds more being outed. The fact that he's dead is a bad thing. It's an objectively bad thing. And we all know why he's dead. We all know why he's dead. It does us no good to pretend that we don't know why he's dead. I don't know. I'm upset. I'm upset that the Epstein story went away so quick. Of all the things I thought were going to happen with that story, that was not it. I did not think that story was going to just disappear. I didn't expect it. And I'm upset that it has happened. Because it has. Nobody gives a shit anymore. It makes me very pessimistic. It makes me very pessimistic about the American public. But with that, we are almost 40 minutes into this show at this point. And that being the case, you know what time it is.
Credits will do fine. It's time for Who Do You Trust? Hubba, hubba, hubba. Money, money, money. Who do you trust?
Who do you trust? I'll tell you who I trust. I trust Superior Executive Producer Sawyu 77 and Xerce, and I trust the wonderful producers Absurdist Fool and Max Ogburn. Max Ogburn's been with us forever. Absurdist Fool, good person to talk to on Twitter, actually. Xerce, Sawyu 77, thank you all so much. I need to update everyone on the current state of the Subscribestar. As for the very first payout I've ever asked for, and received it, and I'm eternally grateful to you guys, all of you wonderful supporters of the show. I updated, because one of the things I had to do in order to request a payout was be my own supporter, because I needed to get it over a certain threshold in order to request a payout. I raised the goal for the special episodes, and I'll explain what that means here in a second. The goal is now $70. It says on that. I think I'm going to lower it to $65 because I can only ask for about $45 a month as opposed to a straight $50. So I think I'm going to lower it to like $65. And I think I'm going to have a $65 goal on the Subscribestar. And I'm going to change the reward from picking a name out of a hat. The original reward was picking a producer plus's name out of a hat to be a guest on an episode. We've reached that goal once, and so I'm going to honor that goal having been reached. I'll be pulling a name out of a hat and talking to an individual for an episode who is a producer plus of $5 or more. I will be doing that. I need to plan it, and I need to not have so much schoolwork, but that is something I'm going to honor. But I'm changing it from that reward to a more general call-in style episode. It could be a little bit longer, but I want to give everybody a chance to call in and talk about something that they care about. Maybe take, 15, 20 minutes, whatever it is, if you're a producer plus $5 or more and you have something you want to talk about on the show. I'm thinking about just, having you join a Discord channel while I'm doing the show and we can talk about it. We can talk about whatever you want to talk about. Like I said, take 15, 20 minutes, and do it that way. Make that a bonus episode. It would be in addition to the other episodes that exist. And that, I think, is a better reward. I think it's better to give all the producers the opportunity to come in and talk if they want to, as opposed to leaving it up to chance. We have a small enough community here that I can get away with having a call-in show. And since I have the Discord and stuff, I figure, why the hell not go for it? We have a very tight community here, and it's small enough that we could totally get away with that. Probably have like 3 or 4 people want to call in per show. It would be great. It would be really, really good. And that way, everybody has a chance to accept a reward for helping the show reach a milestone. I want to be clear on one other thing. Raising the level on the goal does not mean I am asking current producers to give anything more. I'm not asking anyone to give anything more. I love what each and every one of you do for the show, whether it's giving money to the Subscribestar or telling people about the show, even something as simple as rating the show, reviewing the show, downloading the show. That helps. All of that helps. And I appreciate every single listener for whatever it is that they do in whatever capacity they do it. I'm not asking for more from you guys, but the raising that goal and making it just a little higher gives incentive to evangelize a little bit, and it gives us kind of a reason to try and expand this community. Because that's what I want to do. I want to get this out to more people. I want us to have more people in that Discord. I want us to have, more people on Twitter, more people on, I want to get back into Minds. Cause that's where Maxo's at. Maxo's on Minds. Talk to him there. I want to get more people on the Minds on, interacting and things like that. I want this to be a good, robust community. And I think the way to do that is to reward people, new listeners, especially, for subscribing on the Subscribestar, giving them a reason to want to do that. And a reward like that is a reason to want to do that. So, I will say again, big, massive, huge, bottom of my heart, thanks to Superior Executive Producer Saryu77, Enix Searcy, and producers Absurdist Fool and Max Ogburn. You are all gods amongst men, wolves amongst ravens, diamonds in the rough, wonderful human beings on this absolute fucking cesspool we call the internet, and I love each and every one of you. This from Axios, published today, the 9th of September. 50 states and territories open joint antitrust investigation into Google. Attorneys General of 50 states and territories on Monday formally announced a joint bipartisan antitrust investigation into Google, the Washington Post reports. The move by the states and territories represents a new wide-ranging front in the government-led assault on Google's power. It also means that even if parallel probes by the... Ooh, I got a hiccup. Wow. Even if parallel probes by the Department of Justice and Congress fizzle out, some even more aggressive state prosecutors could carry on the fight. The investigation, led by Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton, will determine if Google's online dominance stifles competition in the online advertisement industry. California and Alabama are the only two states that have not joined the investigation. Paxton said during a press conference outside the U.S. Supreme Court building that the investigation is, quote, to determine the facts. Right now, it's about advertising, but the facts will lead where they lead. The Attorney General investigation adds yet another layer of scrutiny to big tech. Google, Facebook, and Amazon have historically enjoyed wide regulatory freedom in the U.S., but are now facing numerous state and federal probes into their practices. This fascinates me. I'm excited about this. I don't like it. I want to be very clear about that up top. I do not like this. Not a huge fan of government action. That said, I am fascinated to see what comes of it. Because right now, it's about advertising, but the facts will lead where they lead. This could be going toward political meddling. Political handle jiggling. Because we know that Google does that. Google's admitted that they do that. Facebook admitted that they do that. They put a finger on the scale in elections. And I am fascinated to see where this thing goes. Antitrust investigation into Google. 50 states and territories. California and, what did they say? California and Alabama. The only ones that didn't join the investigation. Fascinating stuff. Here you go, guys. You guys have a digital scope on your firearm. Digital scope you can hook up to an app. Digital scope you can hook up to an app helps you like zero the scope, and sometimes you can record video from it even. Yeah. The U.S. government might soon know who you are, where you live, and how to reach you. This from Forbes. Exclusive. Feds demand Apple and Google hand over names of 10,000 plus users of a GunScope app. The government wants Apple and Google to hand over names, phone numbers, and other identifying data of at least 10,000 users of a single GunScope app. Forbes has discovered it's an unprecedented move. Never before has a case been disclosed in which American investigators demanded personal data of users of a single app from Apple and Google. And never has an order been made public where the feds have asked the Silicon Valley giants for info on so many thousands of people in one go. According to an application for a court order filed by the Department of Justice on September 5th, investigators want information on users of Obsidian 4, a tool used to control rifle scopes made by night vision specialist American Technologies Network Corp. The app allows gun owners to get a live stream, take video, and calibrate their gun scope from an Android or iPhone device. According to the Google Play page for Obsidian 4, it has more than 10,000 downloads. Apple doesn't provide download numbers, so it's unclear how many iPhone owners could be swept up in this latest government data grab. Maxo on the chat says, why my guns don't connect to the internet? I don't know why you want guns that connect to the internet. I'm pretty sure if you got guns, you want them to be as dark as possible. But in any case, I guess some people really want this. I don't know. I have no idea. If the court approves the demand, and Apple and Google decide to hand over the information, it could include data on thousands of people who have nothing to do with the crimes being investigated, privacy activists warned. Eden Omanovic, lead on Privacy International State Surveillance Program, said it would set a dangerous precedent and scoop up huge amounts of innocent people's personal data. That's a quote. Quote, such orders need to be based on suspicion and be particularized. This is neither, Omanovic added. Neither Apple nor Google had responded to a request for comment at the time of the publication. ATN, the scope maker, also has not responded. Why are they doing it? The Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE Department, is seeking information as part of a broad investigation into possible breaches of weapons export regulations. It's looking into illegal exports of ATN scope, though the company itself isn't under investigation according to the order. As part of that, investigators are looking for a quick way to find out where the app is in use, and that will likely indicate where the hardware has been shipped. ICE has repeatedly intercepted illegal shipments of the scope, which is controlled under the International Traffic in Arms Regulation, ITAR, according to the government court filing. They included shipments to Canada, the Netherlands, and Hong Kong, where the necessary licenses can't be obtained. So for those of you wondering how you can run guns to Hong Kong, don't do it however these people try to do it, because it's not going to work. They're going to get caught. There's much more to this story, and I'm not going to read it because we all know what the implications of this are. A lot of innocent people are going to get swept up in this, and all their data is going right into the hands of ICE and any other federal agency that wants it, really. So there you go. Don't connect your shit to the fucking internet. Do not connect your guns to the goddamn internet. Are you insane? Ugh. I don't understand why anyone would think that was a good idea. I get it. Like, I understand that it's cool. Like, you can save your scope video and shit, but you can also rail mount a GoPro. So, like, maybe do that instead. Because this is... Don't connect your firearms accoutrement to the internet. Don't do that. Keep your firearms a black box, guys. It's hard enough already. This also from Axios, published on the 8th of September. Mark Sanford announces GOP primary challenge against Trump. I am so here for this. Former South Carolina Governor and Congressman Mark Sanford announced on Fox News Sunday that he is launching a primary challenge against President Trump. Sanford, who lost his congressional primary in 2018 after Trump encouraged voters to ditch him, joins former Republican Joe Walsh and former Governor Bill Weld in the long-shot effort to oust Trump as the Republican nominee in 2020. Trump enjoys a near 90% approval rating in the Republican Party and is unlikely to be defeated in a primary. Sanford is well known for a scandal in which he disappeared for a week in 2009, telling his staff that he would be hiking in the Appalachian Trail. In reality, the then-married governor was engaged in an extramarital affair with a woman in Argentina. Sanford addressed the controversy on Fox, telling Chris Wallace, quote, I actually went on an apology tour, if you want to call it that, back home in the wake of that for the last year and a half of my governorship. And what I learned through that is, I guess, what General Mattis talks about. The mistakes in life, mistakes that we make, are the great tuitions of life. They cost us, but you can learn from them. And for me, I learned a level of humility, a level of empathy that I didn't have before, a level of judgment. It is something of great regret. It's something I've apologized extensively for, and in contrast to the president, when he says there's not a single thing that he sort of regrets or apologizes for, I profoundly apologize for that. Both Kansas and South Carolina's Republican Party shuttered their 2020 presidential primaries last week, making the long-shot GOP challengers even less likely to succeed. So, I'm fascinated by this idea. There's this weird undercurrent and a lingering hope that Trump is going to get primaried. And Trump is not going to get primaried. It's not going to happen. I find it fascinating that people are even trying. And I find it incredible that Sanford is trying, because this dude embarrassed himself, like, really badly. And nobody really even knew that he was, like, wormed his way back into Congress. I say wormed, he married his mistress. Like, they, by all accounts, he was legitimately in love with her. But, oh man, Trump getting primaried, I don't see it happening. But I do have these weird worlds in my head where weird political things happen, and Trump getting primaried is one of those things. Trump getting primaried is one of those weird divergent timelines that I like to think about sometimes because, oh my God, would that not be fascinating? I want to let everybody know I want to have some coverage of the Democratic debate, not too terribly much, because I know a lot of people don't care about it. Not live coverage, by the way, of the debate, but I want to talk about it a little bit on the show after it happens. I'm not sure which show that's going to be exactly. It might be next week's, actually. No, it's not that soon. Anyway, yeah, I was looking at some of that. I really want to talk about that, so I want to let you know that I'll be doing that in the coming weeks. Thank you all so much. Thank you so much to the producers of the show, the superior executive producers of the show. I hope you guys are excited about this new reward thing that I have set up on the Subscribestar. I personally am very excited about it. Like I said, we have a small community here, a community of people that I do enjoy talking to. I talk to each and every person who is a producer of this show. Outside of the context of the show, I talk to Absurdist Fool and Maxo and Ixie and Saw U77 all the time. I'm talking to these people and I really enjoy it. And I don't know, I want to take advantage of the size of the community as it is right now, and have people come on and talk about things they care about. I think that's it. I think that's it for today. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. We'll see you next week. I want to thank everybody who hung out in the chat and kept me on my toes during this recording. You can do that every week, airad.io/live. I want to thank everybody who listens to the show, everybody who downloads the show, everybody who rates us and gives us a review on whatever platform you listen on. I want to thank the producers, all you glorious and magnanimous people who support this show. You can do that on airad.io or on the Rogue File, roguefile.com/donate. You can find the things that I write on the Rogue File, roguefile.com. Remember, you can find me on Twitter at Dean O Files. You can find the network on Twitter at AltNet Radio. Go ahead and give us a follow there. I love every single one of you glorious freaks, and I will be back with you next week. Y'all have a great week. This has been an alternative internet radio production. For more great shows like this, visit AIR at airad.io. That's airad.io.